What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. I am Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Canucks geek Thomas Drantz, who covers the team for The Athletic.
There we go.
That's right. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, footwear and orthotics working together with you in step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. It's a Monday edition of the show. It's a Canucks game day. And, you know, just coming off another placid, quiet, ho-hum weekend around the Vancouver Canucks. How's it going, Drantz?
Another weekend, another near-miss blockbuster involving multiple of the Canucks' core pieces. This is where we're at now. Right?
It's a weekly tradition.
Well, like the most exciting part of Hockey Night in Canada broadcasts is the headline segment for Canucks fans. And that's with the Canucks owning Saturday nights.
Yeah.
Man, if they were, who plays on Saturday nights? High school football team? College football team.
College football, yeah.
If they were a college football team, man, they'd be getting ready.
Watch out.
They'd be getting ready for the playoffs.
They don't play on Friday or on Saturday this week. Monday, Wednesday, Friday schedule. So tough times.
Brutal break.
Tough times for the Canucks.
And about to start a key road trip. Let's get into it all in the whiteboard.
Let's go to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, January 27th. And we'll start with the headlines. And as has become customary, headline number one, JT Miller and Elias Pettersson, both still members of the Vancouver Canucks, though certainly from what we can gather, not for a lack of trying on the part of the club. And look, we'll talk about the result against the Capitals. We'll look ahead to the game against the Blues. But really, I mean, if we're talking the biggest story around this team right now, there's no contest. It is the fact that, again, in back-to-back weeks, going into the weekend, Friday night, they have come, from what we can tell, very, very, very close to moving a pair of franchise cornerstones in JT Miller and Elias Pettersson. Maybe JT Miller has been involved in that twice, but a week ago, certainly, or 10 days ago or so, it was JT Miller to the Rangers almost happening. This past weekend, Elias Pettersson apparently very close to being moved to the Carolina Hurricanes before they ultimately acquire Mikko Rantanen in a shock blockbuster deal from the Colorado Avalanche. But this is kind of where we're at now. A very motivated front office with a history of making bold, decisive moves is trying to make a massive, massive blockbuster deal. And again, we'll keep talking about the games, but until something changes on this front, either the deals get done or we have reason to believe they're not trying anymore, this is the biggest, most important, biggest headline, certainly, around the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, I mean, they had a decent win against the Washington Capitals. Kevin Lankinen was great. Quinn Hughes was great. Felt like the Caps were pretty unfortunate in that one. I mean, how many times did Alexi Protas dissect Vancouver's defensive structure and send beautiful passes into the low slot that, like, Lars Eller and then Matt Wah and then Tom Wilson, like, just couldn't quite find the handle on. Lankinen coming up big in multiple instances, but also, you know, some of those Capitals teammates not quite doing Protas's playmaking justice. And yet, again, it's like, okay, the Canucks won. It was a big win. Honestly, that was you could be five
important.
Points.
Extremely important.
Yeah, you could be 5 points back of the Calgary Flames right now.
Yep.
Albeit with a game in hand because they lost to the Winnipeg Jets last night.
I think it's the same number of games played.
Is
though.
It?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because the Canucks, already had a game in hand. That was them playing it.
So you could be five games back of the Calgary Flames with a team that's legitimately better than you in the Utah Hockey Club, 1 point back of you. Like it's not curtains because it's still January, but that's a really tough spot to be in. Now the Canucks still have a little bit of a cushion and a game in hand over Utah, and 3 points is far less insurmountable when it comes to your game against the Calgary Flames. So, or your positioning vis-a-vis the Calgary Flames. And yet, again, it's like the Mikko Rantanen trade. So, Elliot Friedman on this file reporting that effectively Carolina, and this is also Pierre LeBrun from The Athletic, effectively reporting that the Carolina Hurricanes, in deciding between their options and wanting to pick up multiple forwards, went back to teams that were selling high-end players, and these are all high-end players, and said, put your best offers on the table, and effectively chose between Miller, between Pettersson, and between Mikko Rantanen, and they elected Mikko Rantanen. Now, why wouldn't you, right? Yeah. I mean, this is...
Mikko Rantanen is an insane player. He's so good.
Mikko Rantanen is one of the most unique pieces in the sport. 6'4", 215 pounds. He's like, you know, we shouldn't have consistent 35-goal, 90-point wingers, but he is one.
Mm-hmm.
He's a 6'4 winger who, like, legitimately is nails operating off the half wall on the power play. He can play a power forward game at 5-on-5. He actually sort of holds his stick out in front of his body like Connor Garland. Like, he shortens his stick, which makes him impossible. He's as difficult to check as a player whose center of gravity puts them a foot shorter. Honestly. And he's 6'4" doing it. It's wild. And so and he's got the expiring contract. Now, I don't think the expiring contract played a huge role here in the Hurricanes deciding on Mikko Rantanen. I think it was flat out like, hey, this guy's a consistent superstar level player. Pettersson struggled for a year. JT Miller is an even year player. And so let's just get the best, most consistent guy. I think that was fundamentally what it came down to. Nonetheless, and there's, I think, a couple of really fascinating data points here. One, the Hurricanes, the team that was leveraged against Elias Pettersson in contract talks 12 months ago, came back to the Canucks and based on Friedman's reporting, offered them a pretty similar package, including Martin Natchez, to the Canucks for Pettersson. Well, that was the primary piece in trade talks between the two sides a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
So over the past 12 months, I don't need to tell our listeners, Elias Pettersson has signed an $11.6 million long-term contract. He has subsequently struggled the entire time, right? Like, at no point has he looked like the same player.
Nope.
He struggled in the playoffs. He struggled down the stretch, and he has 30 points this season. He's been widely rumored to have issues with a teammate in the locker room. So all of those things have transpired here.
Well, not to mention the commentary from the team about, you know, he thought it would be easy, maybe.
Right.
But the constant drumbeat of needing him to work hard or needing him to mature,
move
all
his
of those
feet,
things.
Prepare yeah. better. Well, and you know, I think that's a real sense behind the scenes, too. So all of this has happened, and yet a real live actor in the NHL, one of the best teams in the league, one of the most consistently effective front offices, looked at Pettersson and said, yeah, his value is roughly the same.
Yep.
We don't think his value is significantly changed. That's a huge data point with far-reaching implications for what should come next for the Canucks. We also know, obviously, that Miller's not in the same category in terms of what teams are willing to pay. Obviously, this guy's going to turn 32 in 6 weeks. He's still going to be effective and still makes sense, I think, as a target for a team with short-term goals. But he's signed till he's 37. I mean, there's a huge amount of risk there. The Hurricanes, when they have, as we've talked about, signed guys like Jordan Staal, who are in their 30s to deals with term. I mean, what's Jordan Staal's cap? It's like $2 million, man. Like, severe, severe discount. When they've traded for guys like Brent Burns, they gave up like their fifth best goalie prospect in a fifth round pick.
Yeah.
And San Jose retained on the deal, right? I mean, if they're sniffing around players like that, it's for cents on the dollar. So that's another data point here. Carolina's interest in Miller, I believe, was real, by the way. I don't believe that this was some master feint by the Carolina Hurricanes to try and get or pry Pettersson out of Vancouver. I think they were looking for top-end talent, and they found top-end talent. And I think Miller and Pettersson were both considerations for them. But Miller at a far lower price point, and Pettersson at a price point that pretty closely matches where he was 12 months ago before all of this started. Let's unpack it in a, like, maybe the last segment, because I think there's a lot of takeaways here for us, but I think those are the two main things, and I wrote about this at The Athletic today. You can go read my take there, but I just think what this has shown us is should be very eye-opening in terms of what the Canucks are really dealing with in considering both players on the trade block. And I do think that we can take it further than just what this tells us into what it should mean for the team going forward.
Yeah, there's a lot to get into on this. And as I said, from what we can tell, this storyline is not going anywhere. It's going to be continue to be front burner stuff, front page stuff for the Canucks until something changes one way or another. And we'll touch on it in the broadsheet portion just quickly a little bit here in a second. But, you know, just a couple of other notes from the weekend. And as mentioned, Canucks get the result 2-1 over the Capitals on Saturday. And really, Quinn Hughes, you mentioned Kevin Lankinen, but Quinn Hughes scores both goals.
I mentioned Hughes too.
All right, fair enough.
I said Hughes and Lankinen. The two guys who have carried this team all season continue to carry this team.
I wasn't paying attention. I don't care.
Fair enough.
But Quinn Hughes leads the Canucks to a 2-1 win over the Capitals. Now 5 goals in his last 5 games.
How about that backhand?
For Quinn Hughes. Incredible backhand. And just, I mean, what else can you say? And now the stat that's getting a lot of play, and I think rightfully so, is just the gap between his points
is the one I tweeted in the second intermission.
And the next leading scorer on the Vancouver Canucks. And what can you say? I mean, that's a bad place to be for a defenseman to be leading your team in scoring by that much, especially when you have two forwards you expect to be, you know, 90 plus point guys.
Yeah, totaling 19.6 against the cap. Yeah, I mean, you know what? This is like shades of that Pavel Bure season in Florida where he had like 60 more points than, I mean, it's not that dramatic in terms of the gap, but it kind of is because of the positional variance here, right? Mm-hmm. It's one thing for David Pastrnak, for whom the power play runs through and who like mixes and matches his line mates and is clearly the central driver of an offensively challenged team, to lead his team by 21 points. It's another if it's Nikita Kucherov, who once again runs the power play, right? Like, is the main orchestrator. Travis Konecny, likewise, right? Like, oh, wow, your most skilled winger leads your team in scoring by a wide margin? Shocking. That's not shocking, right? The fact that Hughes, a defenseman, is in their company, that's amazing for Quinn Hughes. I do think it's a testament to the fact that this guy has ascended to a level where mm-hmm. there should be some margin in terms of how we discuss him and the field in terms of defenders. Like, I don't even think it should be like Hughes or Makar. It's Hughes versus the field. Like, there is space here. Unless you're not watching or willfully ignorant about it, or just like are saying stuff like right-handed and like crying into your Dune popcorn bucket. Truly, it's Hughes versus the field. And this does speak to, I think, the gap that he's put between himself and every other defender in hockey. But man, it's a problem for the team. I did see, I think it was Bruff who sort of did the follow-up analysis and noted that, you know, the second leading scorer is JT Miller with 33 yep. points, and that he has fewer points than any other team's
second
top scoring forward.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Whew. Well, because I do think another part of it, you know, you made the comparison to, so Kucherov, I mean, there are obviously other elite offensive players on that team, like Braden Point and Jake Guentzel. I mean, Kucherov is just, he's a Hart Trophy candidate on a regular basis for a reason. You know, Konecny, I think it's telling because it's not
he's the second best player in the game. I'm pretty confident.
I'm not quite ready to go there over Nathan McKinnon, but
I think it's McDavid and then Kucherov.
Kucherov is an incredible player, obviously. You know, Konecny, I think, is a telling example in terms of guys who have this massive gap over the next leading scorer on their team. It's not like that team is flush with regular high-end offensive contributors. So it's okay. Yeah, as you said, team's best forward, team's most skilled winger. You can make it can happen that he has that kind of gap. Again, the personnel, the fact that Quinn Hughes is doing it over Elias Pettersson and JT Miller is just really, really stunning and tells you so much about how this team's season has gone. And I do, maybe we'll get into this a little bit later as well. Bruff was there at the game on Saturday, asking Rick Tocchet questions and specifically about the team's inability to get to the slot and make plays. And obviously Rick Tocchet's offensive system and what it's doing or not doing for the forwards has been a huge talking point in the market. I was just kind of thinking, like, why is it that Quinn Hughes is able to make plays, be dynamic, make plays, be creative, right? I don't think it's because Rick Tocchet has carved out a special set of rules within his system for Quinn Hughes. I think Quinn Hughes is doing it for whatever reason, and other guys just haven't been capable of doing it on a regular basis this year. But I don't think it's that Rick Tocchet is purposely only allowing Quinn Hughes to be dynamic, to be productive within his system. Quickly,
I did just double check it, by the way, and the Canucks are, in fact, their second leading scorer or their lowest scoring forward, JT Miller, 33 points. They're the only team without a forward over 35 points at this point in the season. And the other teams without a forward who's over 40 are Calgary, Anaheim, Vancouver, and Seattle.
Very good.
Yikes.
Very good.
Probably. Like, I don't know how else do you caption that? That's
it's bad.
Brutal.
Quickly, before we move on to the broadsheet, what do you think about Elias Pettersson, the defenseman? Didn't play a ton, but big moment for him. And for the organization,
I think, looked good.
Considering how high they are on the player, for him to make his NHL debut.
I thought he looked good. I mean, obviously, because the game was tight late, you were not going to see him play a ton down the stretch of that game. I liked some of the mobility that we saw in the blue line. I thought he was able to battle physically. He had some nicely timed pinches, looked pretty comfortable. You know, much like everything I've ever heard about him and seen from him, because this is a prospect I've always been very high on, he looked pretty authoritative. He looked confident. And I think that matters, especially for a defenseman. I think there's some sneaky foot speed there. I don't think he's just going to be a one-dimensional defensive guy necessarily. That's obviously going to be his calling card. But I think you can see that he's pretty comfortable with the puck on his stick. He's not a head-down guy. You know, we'll need to see a lot more. I don't know if he's an NHL-level player today. But I thought that was a pretty auspicious debut, which is consistent with everything we've seen from him since the Canucks drafted him. This is a player who's trended in a very promising way since the moment he was selected in Montreal at the 2022 NHL entry draft.
So the Canucks play the St. Louis Blues tonight, 4:30 start time. Here it is on Amazon. So if you're not able to watch, you can always listen in, of course, to the broadcast here on Sportsnet 650. First of a 3-game road trip for the Canucks. Blues chasing them in the standings, in the playoff standings, have lost a couple in a row. Made a trade today as well, sending Scott Perunovic to the New York Islanders. And we'll see who starts in goal and what the lineup looks like for the Canucks. We can touch on some of those decisions in the lineup notes section. On to the broadsheet, and some of this was summed up by what you had to say about the Rantanen deal and the Canucks part and all of it over the weekend. But Elliot Friedman reporting, of course, that the Canucks had an offer on the table to send Elias Pettersson to Carolina. Carolina chose Rantanen. Now, Friedman says talks continue around Elias Pettersson. Buffalo, he highlights, as one of the teams interested, potentially the favorite to land him. But, of course, there are other teams as well. And I'll just note that Rick Dhaliwal, on today's Donnie and Dolly, saying, yeah, they're still taking calls on both JT Miller and Elias Pettersson. So last week, it seemed like there was all the momentum behind Miller moving. Now, maybe Elias Pettersson came closer to moving, but still both guys very much in play. And it leads to the question of, could we see a much larger dismantling of this team? You know, even Kevin Woodley on our show on Friday saying, like, hey, not reporting anything, but in the goalie world, there's whispers that Thatcher Demko has maybe been involved in some of these trade conversations. Brock Besser is a pending unrestricted free agent. So Miller and Pettersson very much in the spotlight. Would still expect one or both of them to be moved before the NHL trade deadline. I'm really curious to see how much farther it goes beyond that as well. We can talk more about the dynamics of trading those guys. I know you got some takes you want to get off on that we'll get into later on in the show. But to the lineup notes. So,
go ahead. More generally, though, like Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin do not want to be reactive. That's not how they're wired, right? There is a philosophical belief that trading at high volume, mining value where you can, is a competitive edge, and one that this team has chased in their tenure. And obviously for Rutherford, that goes way back. Pittsburgh, Carolina, on and on. How frustrated do you think they are that they haven't been able to translate the decision to alter this core group into an actual hockey trade despite getting, you know, into the red zone with it in consecutive weekends? I mean, I'd imagine the frustration level is high. And
yeah, they're the guys who get deals done.
They're guys who get deals done.
They got the Elias Lindholm deal done early because they're like, no, we want to do this. Let's go. Let's be decisive. Let's do it.
Correct. And so, you know, I'd imagine there's a high level of frustration among Canucks management, understandably. But what we're talking about are like seismic deals, earth-shaking transactions from the franchise's perspective. I do think it's, at this point, pretty important that the organization, and granted there's knives out, public scrutiny and national scrutiny around this situation is now, I mean, it has been for a while, but it's fever pitch level, right? These are situations in the past where we've seen this organization occasionally get a bit muddled in terms of sort of the alacrity with which they make these decisions. So this does begin to feel like a pretty dangerous moment. You can't make a move on tilt. You can't make an emotional trade. I think you have to be pretty deliberate with sort of where you go. And this isn't me reporting it. This is me feeling my way through it and sort of taking what I know about this organization and about these executives and just sort of reading between the lines of the situation. But this does feel like an especially dangerous moment from a Canucks perspective in terms of charting a short and long-term course forward with whatever they decide to do.
All right, to the lineup notes, no game day skate in St. Louis today. The team practiced yesterday. Some of the highlights there. Noah Juulsen, after missing a few games, he's a game-time decision. Dakota Joshua as well had a practice with the team yesterday, so Rick Tocchet calling him a game time decision. It would be great, man, for Dakota Joshua to get back into the lineup and hopefully start ramping up, providing some of that physical element that the team's been lacking this year. Tyler Myers will be back after a three-game suspension. Kiefer Sherwood might meet the team on this three-game road trip at some point. Those are kind of the lineup notes from Tocchet yesterday. I'm also curious to see if Pettersson, the defenseman, stays in the lineup, even with Tyler Myers coming back.
Mark Friedman was sent down.
Noah Juulsen's a game-time decision, so some competition for spots, but curious to see that, and then also curious to see if they roll with Kevin Lankinen again after he was so good on Saturday against Washington. But you also know there's a desire to get Demko games here, so a tricky goaltending decision. And I think for the rest of the year, really, it's going to be tricky to manage the goaltending situation for Tocchet and the Canucks. Playoff standings update. Canucks playoff chances back up to 70% in Dom's model after they win. Calgary loses over the weekend. They're now 3 points back of the Flames with the same number of games played. 48 games played, 55 points for Calgary, 52 for Vancouver. St. Louis, as mentioned, they're at 50 points with 50 games played. They've lost a couple in a row, and Utah has lost a couple in a row as well. So the Canucks still, per Dom's model, with pretty favorable 70% chance to make the playoffs.
The Vancouver Canucks are underdogs on the road against the St. Louis Blues tonight. Plus 115, St. Louis minus 135 favorites on the money line. These are the gambling odds, of course. That's a 57% probability of victory for the St. Louis Blues. What are we doing here, man? What are we doing here? My goodness. Like, this Blues team is the most directionless franchise in hockey. They've been playing better under Jim Montgomery, but my goodness. Your dogs against the Blues? Come on. Come on. By the way, the Canucks are now literally at even money, well, minus 110 to make the playoffs and to miss the playoffs. And here's a fun one for us to track tomorrow because we can see the shift. The St. Louis Blues plus 750. To make the playoffs. That's an 11.7% implied probability. Do we see that shift tonight based on the outcome of this game? I mean, quietly an important one. You don't want to give the Blues this additional life, especially because, man, they're not as good as Utah, and they are far back points-wise of the Calgary Flames. You just don't want to put the Blues into a position where it's like there's another team between you and them. A 4-point game tonight, if the Canucks can't find a way to get, you know, a point or two out of it, man, that would really significantly dent, in my view, their playoff odds.
All right, that's the whiteboard for today. We'll take a
break
here.
Not just in my view, in fact, this is a big one.
Yeah, of course. 4-pointer tonight in St. Louis. We'll take a break. Ian McIntyre from Sportsnet joins us next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.